The Here podcast is all about reclaiming your power and reconnecting with your mind and body. By releasing our stories and the power they have had over our lives and creating a compassionate and supportive community, we can bring love, understanding, awareness, and healing to ourselves and to all who need it most. Join me in saying, enough is enough. I own my power. I am ready for the next chapter of my life, and it will be the most amazing one yet. Content may be discussed that could be distressing to you depending on where you are in your healing journey. If the episode becomes triggering, practice self-care by turning off the episode. If you need to talk to someone, you can always contact your local crisis center or RAIN's national hotline via chat on their website at rain.org or by calling 1-800-656-HOPE. All the links are provided in the show notes.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Allie, for being on the show with me today. So I have Allie Fisher, and she is amazing. She's going to share with us her experience with domestic abuse and how she's really taken that, and she's helping others, how she's helping others guide them through if they're in similar situations. Well, she's had people reach out to her for that and share with us how she did get out of that situation, and then any types of ways that you worked on, you know, recognizing that you were in that spot and ways that you healed that part of you or strengthened that part of you so that you're like, I'm never going to be in that type of situation again. But anyways, Allie, the story is, this show is all about you and your story. So I would love to hear.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here. It's a really important topic for me, as I know it is for you. Sharing is a way to heal. It's a way to heal for us. As survivors, it's a way to share our stories as a means to help others feel that they're not alone in their own struggles as they too work towards their own way of healing. You know, everybody has a unique set of circumstances, is what I like to say. I mean, we all have emotions, we all share sadness and anger and disappointment and frustrations. And I think those are this common thread, this one thing that we all share as survivors of this horrible thing that happens. But the circumstances of our situations are different, right? Our stories and our narratives are very different. So, I mean, I'll give you a little background about me. I'll start from the beginning. I mean, I don't want to bore you with too much of my childhood. But I'll start with a little bit of how I was raised. And, you know, I've given a lot of thought, I think, as most people do when they're thrust into abusive relationships. Because you ask yourself this question, you know, what the hell happened to me over the course of my childhood? What did my parents do to me? What happened to me in grade school or with my friends or with my relationships that forced me to not see signs, maybe not be as strong as I should have been? And I've asked myself these questions consistently over the years, and I'm in my 40s, so it's a lot of asking, you know? Yeah. And I've come to the realization that I did nothing wrong. And I think that's the message that I try to share with a lot of women. You don't have to have this horrible, abusive childhood. You don't have to have parents that set this poor example for you. You didn't have to come from an abusive sort of parental upbringing, with horrible siblings or you know, bad grade school in order to wind up in a bad relationship. I consider myself pretty damn smart. I mean, I'm an executive at a company, pretty intelligent. I consider myself to be pretty sharp. And I wound up in an abusive situation with a man that I probably shouldn't have been with in the first place. And you look back and you ask yourself, why? You know, why did I choose him? Why didn't I make better decisions? I don't know. I think that sometimes love and emotions take over, and it blinds you. You don't see certain signs, maybe the way that you should, but it doesn't mean that you should beat yourself up over it. I think that you have to have a level of forgiveness and try to move past it, which is what I've done. You have to move past it. If you live with that guilt for your whole life, you're going to be beating yourself up for your whole life. And as we had discussed the other day, you really only have one life. You know, I'm halfway through my life. So if I continue to sort of wallow in that and feel as if I'm this victim and that I made these bad decisions and look back and constantly try to sort of relive what happened, I'm never going to be looking forward. So you want to learn. I mean, you definitely want to learn so you don't repeat that sort of behavior and that you don't wind up in those same negative relationships. I mean, that's obviously very important. But you can't beat yourself up for maybe some of the bad decisions that you did make. And that's what I talk to women and men a lot about. You know, my childhood was generally okay. I had loving parents. They weren't the best. They were okay. They didn't really see me. I think I was on my own, maybe for most of my childhood. I was bullied pretty significantly growing up. And when I tried to talk to my parents about it, they didn't really care. They thought I was overreacting. And I suffered from that for most of my life. I would say probably from kindergarten up and through some part in high school, until I found a group of friends who really loved me for me. And that was tough, but I always found a way through it. I never fell into depression. I never felt too suicidal. I always found a way through it. And I think I was born with a level of resiliency. And I talk a lot about how resiliency and vulnerability can work well in combination with each other. How vulnerability is not a weakness, how you can show your weaknesses and be vulnerable and also be strong and bold and brave at the same time. I obviously was sad growing up, but I did not let it get me to the point where it broke me. And then I found myself in my 20s. And I was raped in my 20s. I believe I was given probably a date rape drug. I was on vacation and I was in a foreign country with a friend of mine, and I didn't report it. I didn't know what to do about it. I came home and I went on with my life just as everything was normal. And it's not that I shoved it aside. I just knew that if I had let that eat me up, that it would be all consuming. So I sort of moved on. I started my life. I started a great job. And then I wound up in a relationship that I thought was a great relationship. I was in my mid-20s, my late-20s. And it started off fine. It started off normal, like any normal, happy relationship did. There weren't signs of abuse or of alcoholism. It wasn't controlling. There weren't real red flags, like some women look back and say, oh, I really should have seen these things. There weren't any of those things in my relationship. And it probably wasn't until maybe after my first daughter was born that I started to notice things where he started drinking. And the drinking came after some things that happened in his life that made him feel as if he lost control. So he had some issues with PTSD and with ADHD and with manic depressive disorder. So he had some mental issues that did not give him the capacity to cope well. And those things resulted in him drinking. And like many women, I felt the need to take care of him. Yeah. I was stronger. I was the breadwinner. I was more stable. I'm a true type A personality. I felt like I could take charge. I could fix it. You know, we had a young daughter at the time. You know, the drinking will resolve itself if he gets better. And he started to see a psychiatrist. Later, I found out he was lying to the psychiatrist, you know, but he didn't want help. And that's the big difference. You know, I think as a spouse, you can help your spouse. I don't believe in abandoning your spouse if they have problems, but they have to want to help themselves. If they don't want to help themselves, then you're doing it for no one. You can give yourself all the excuses in the world that you're doing it for the family. You're doing it for him. You're doing it for you. It's an exercise in futility. If your spouse does not want the help, then nothing is going to come of it. And I wasted years of my life, exhausting years of my life, on trying to make him better, because I knew that he had a disease. Alcoholism is a disease. I still believe it's a disease. Yeah. But if you don't have someone that wants to get better, then there really is nothing that you can do to help them. And at some point you need to take a step back and say, is this really the life that I want to live for myself? Is this really the life that I want to live for the next 5, 10, 15, 20, 50 years? Because for me, it wasn't abusive initially. It just started off with him drinking. But it wasn't a healthy relationship. It wasn't a balanced relationship. And then it did become controlling, in that he knew how to push my buttons and make me unhappy. Mm-hmm. It was not an even relationship as far as the responsibilities. And then one day it turned violent. And I think a lot of women do what I just said also. Well, he only hit me once. You know, he was controlling, but it never turned violent.
Yeah.
I mean, abuse is abuse. Abuse is financial control, emotional control, sexual control, physical control. Abuse comes in, I mean, I think there's maybe 20 different categories of abuse. Yeah. It doesn't just have to be physical. For me, the physical was the tipping point, which maybe it is for many women. And it only took one time for me. I came home from, I don't know, I was out somewhere with my girls. They were 1 and 4. We came home. He was extremely drunk. And I knew that that night was different than other nights. There was something about the sort of the aura of the house. And I tried to pack up the girls and get out. But I live in a fairly small house. So I was trying to sort of get into a bedroom to get their stuff to pack up, and try to avoid him at the same time. And it was a bit impossible. So I put my 4-year-old in her bed and I had my 1-year-old with me. And he hit me. He hit me in the face. He broke my cheekbone. He broke my nose. And then he came back a second time and he hit me and he hit my 1-year-old. He didn't mean to hit her, but he did. And I was able to get out that night. And that was the last night that we were physically together, that we were emotionally together. But it took me 2 years to separate the relationship. It took me 2 years to get him out of the house. So, you know, these things don't come easily. I understand that when you're in an abusive relationship, it's not like you just wake up one day and the relationship is over and, you know, everything is separated. There's finances to be separated. There's children to be dealt with. I mean, there's a lot of things that you have to concern yourself with. And I had been building up to that, I think, probably for years, even prior to the actual physical hit. But I knew that once he hit me, I mean, that was it. And it shouldn't have taken that. That's what I try to explain to a lot of women too when I speak to them. If you're sensing that the relationship is really toxic and you're that unhappy, it shouldn't have to take that catalyst of someone physically hitting you in order for you to say, okay, well, when he hits me, then I'll leave. Or if he shoves me, then I'll leave. I mean, it shouldn't have to take that. It's, everybody has a, I guess, a breaking point. I'm just asking for people to care more about themselves and have that breaking point be sooner. You know, it can just be control for that matter. It can be, it just being unhealthy.
So hard because when you were just, you're saying that we definitely want to, you know, be there and help our spouses, but when is it when it's like, it's too much? Because with that, what you were saying is it seemed like he was going to therapy and really trying to make the relationship better. So you're like, okay, that's great. I'm going to stick in and can, you know, continue to try to help. But then it wasn't helping. So yeah, you explained that really well to see, well, how long do I stay? And finally there's that moment where the abuse happened and it was like, okay, now I can leave. Yeah. But
yeah.
But you
looking back though, there were dozens of other moments that should have been those catalysts for me. They were just not as cinematic.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
They should not have to be cinematic. And that is my message. There's hidden moments in every relationship that are telling you this is not right. This is not healthy. This is not good for you. And I think that we all know them. Unfortunately, we know them too late. That's why hindsight's called 2020 for a reason. You know, you always look back and you say, oh, that should have been the time that I left, you know, should have been 5 years before. I want people to be more aware of those moments as they're living them and not be fearful of taking the leap and putting themselves first. It is okay to put yourself first, even though you're dealing with someone that is sick. That person, alcoholism is a disease, but it is not your problem to solve. I felt that it was my problem because he was weak. He was incapable of fixing it. He needed me. And I didn't do it because I felt like I wanted to be needed. I didn't do it because I had issues where, oh, I was in the relationship and I wanted him to need me. It wasn't that sort of thing with me. I just really felt this compassion, like I was being pulled and I didn't want to abandon him in his time of need. But I did it at the expense of my own well-being. And that is not healthy either. I am no less of a human than he is. And you are not tied to your spouse. I think we talked about this too. You are not tied to your children if your children are abusive. I understand that you give birth to your children. And I understand that people, you know, believe that when you're married, you're in it for life. I don't believe that when you're married, you're in it for life if that's not a healthy relationship.
Right.
You should have the right to say, I am important. I matter. My voice matters. And if this person is not good for me, and using the children as an excuse, which so many people do, we're staying together for the kids need two parents. Kids do not need two parents that do not show love and happiness and a healthy relationship.
Yes.
It sets the tone for a perpetual way of unhealthy relationships going forward.
Yes.
I mean, there's studies upon studies that show that children that are exposed to alcoholism and abuse perpetuate that that sort of behavior in all of their future relationships. So to say that you want to stay together because your children should have two parents is horribly selfish. It's a cop-out. People might hate me for that, but it's horribly selfish.
I completely agree with you. If you're a child is happier, logical to me, if you're a child and you're in a single parent, a home, and that parent is loving and your environment is safe and secure, or you have two parents, but you're in fear and you're constantly seeing fighting and you don't know what's going to happen and how insecure you feel. That's not a good situation. It's much better to end that situation. I'm not just saying, oh, single parents is the only way to go. Just saying it's a lot healthier than the other option, the abusive relationship.
I mean, look what's happening now because of COVID. You know, families are forced to be under the same roof.
Scary.
Under really horrific sort of circumstances.
Yeah.
And women who stay in these circumstances for whatever reason, I mean, it's a judgment-free zone. I understand that women stay with their spouses for a variety of reasons. Right. And men stay with their spouses for a variety of reasons. But you can't guarantee that your spouse is always going to leave the house and that you're going to have a safe space for you and your children because your spouse is going to go to work.
Right.
We now have this environment where people are forced to be with their abusers for 24 hours a day. And you're exposing your children to that for 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Almost like you're with your kidnapper, being tortured. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know when things are going to get worse. These are not things that you can control. You don't know when things are going to turn violent. Maybe they're just verbally abusive. Maybe he just controls your finances and doesn't allow you any sort of financial control. Maybe he doesn't allow you to be on social media. Maybe he doesn't allow you to go out with your friends. Maybe he just shoves you a little or just yells at you or throws stuff at you. Maybe he hits you but doesn't, you know, cause you to bleed. Maybe he's only hit you once and it's been 10 years. I mean, how ridiculous does that sound?
When you say it out like that, it does sound ridiculous.
You know, it's like, and it even sounds ridiculous for me to say, well, he only hit me once. And that's not what I mean. I say it because I'm saying he hit me once and I never let him do it again. And I left. And that's the context in which I say he only hit me once. But when I use the word only and hit in the same sentence, I feel ridiculous because I'm like, that's not really what I mean. You know, I'm not trying to justify the fact that he only hit me once. But once is one too many.
Yeah.
You know, all the things that happened leading up to that moment were too many. All of the lies and the control and the difficulties that we faced, I don't know if I really knew that it was going to lead up to physical violence, but all of the other things were bad enough for the relationship to not continue. And had I done something sooner, I would not have been hit. Why didn't I leave? For me, it wasn't financial. I was the breadwinner in the family. So it wasn't a matter of me feeling as if I couldn't survive financially. And I do understand that I'm in a different situation than a lot of women. I had control over my finances and I started to separate our finances. So I started to separate our bank accounts. I started to separate our credit cards. I started to take his name off of joint bills and do a lot of things where I knew when the time came where he left the house, that I wouldn't have to worry about those things legally after the fact. So, you know, my advice to people, if you're thinking about making that move, is start to do those things strategically, because it makes it easier to do them as you go rather than having to do them after the fact.
Yeah. May I ask, how were you able to do that without his consent? Or did you just set up stuff in your own name? Because like accounts, you would need the person's consent, right, to take them off.
Yeah. So the bank accounts, I needed his consent to get his name off. But I want to say that I went to the bank and explained to them the circumstance. And I set up my own accounts.
Okay.
So I started to separate my finances from his finances. And I was fair about it. So I wasn't trying to steal from him. And when you have a joint account, you could basically set up your own account and then deplete your entire joint account and funnel it into your own private account. So if you wanted to be crude about it, I mean, you could basically take all the money from your spouse. I was not looking to, you know, to bankrupt him. And in fact, for about 2 years after we separated, I continued to support him financially with the hopes that he would be able to get himself back on his feet. And he squandered it. He squandered all of the money that I gave him. I gave him a car. He crashed it. He wound up in jail. He wound up homeless. And at some point I cut him off financially because I could not continue. Again, I was doing this with hopes that we would be a pseudo normal family. You know, I did not want to live with him, but I knew that I wanted the children to try to have a relationship with him if he could get better.
Yes. Yes.
So I was trying to give him the best, possible scenario financially for him to get another apartment and have a car and have a, you know, continue to keep his job. And he squandered it. So at that point, there's nothing that I can do. You know, I can't continue to deplete my own finances and hurt my children's finances and put myself in, you know, potential bankruptcy for somebody else who doesn't want the help. When it came to the bank, you know, I set up my own bank accounts and I had my own separate bank accounts, which I strongly suggest no one should ever only have joint accounts with their spouses or with their others. You should always, always have your own money. And that's not to be sneaky. It's not to be cruel, but everyone should always have a means to support themselves without relying and to have control over their money without having to rely on their spouse or their boyfriend. I mean, whoever it is that you're living with.
Yeah, I like that.
So I started setting up my own accounts and then I stopped putting money in the joint accounts. And I started strategically taking money out of the joint accounts, money that I knew that I had put into it and moved it into my own accounts, so that I would be set up when things separated. You know, we only had so many joint savings accounts, joint credit cards. I kept my own separate credit cards. I started to close credit cards to make sure that he wasn't able to, you know, to do anything about them. And I believe at the time I was able to close joint credit cards without dual consent, which was very helpful. And that way he wasn't able to ruin my credit if he started to charge up things, which I knew was very possible. But yeah, I mean, there were a lot of signs, you know, there were a lot of signs well before the actual physical event that happened. And my advice to people that I speak with, whether you're in a situation currently making excuses that it's not as bad as you think, is to really take a step back and just look at the situation, look at all the things that happen and try to figure out, are you in fact making excuses for your spouse? And are you really happy? Is this the situation you want to be in? Even 6 months from now, is this the situation you want to be in? If you didn't have kids with this person, is this the person you'd want to be with for the rest of your life? And if you are out of an abusive relationship, again, no matter what, however that abuse unfolded, why do you feel guilt? You know, what's the problem? Why do you still feel guilty about it? So, taking a hard look at that. what is it that's tying you to that person? Because the whole purpose of leaving is so that you don't have to feel guilty anymore. You don't have to feel tied to them for the rest of your life. So what is it that is preventing you from moving forward? Do you still feel guilty for leaving them in a state of duress because they were an alcoholic, because they had mental issues, because they were a drug addict, you know, whatever the situation? Why is it that you are having trouble moving through that and moving past that? You know, it took me quite a while too to not want to support him and to say, well, he's still an alcoholic. He can't get past this. You know, he still needs my financial support. And I mean, I just had to wake up and say, there's nothing that you can do to fix him. He has to want to fix himself. And he doesn't want to.
Yeah.
So I can't. It's not my job. It's not my job anymore. It was never my job in the first place, by the way.
Right. But you know, you loved him and you were committed to him. And so when these, you know, it's always that, you know, until death do us part, and that we're going to stick in this together. And I totally get you wanted to help him heal, and you obviously had hopes that he would heal. I was in an abusive relationship right out of high school. Yeah. When I started college. And I know for me, I was self-harming at the time because of depression. So I think there was a part of me that thought I didn't deserve better, but there was a huge part of me that knew he had been abused by his father. And I felt bad for him, and he would cry after and say, I don't want to be this way, and I love you. And then that part of me that was like, well, I want to help you. I don't want to abandon you, even though my life was like a horror show with that relationship. But I was like, I want to help, and I cared about you. And so then I would attach to those happy memories, those happy moments. And really, how happy were they? They were probably seemed really happy compared to the bad moments, but, and I would attach to
those. But
that's
what I mean about having a false sense of reality.
Yes.
You know, that's a common thread. I mean, what you just said and what I had said before, that you want to help, you feel this magnet to help the other person at the detriment of your own sanity.
Yes.
And I was stable. So, I mean, I didn't come with that baggage. I was totally stable, but I still felt this drive to help and to fix him because he was not well. And I did it at my own detriment. But it's this narrative that you make in your mind that you have to, because they're not well and you need to fix it. It's this, we have to get past this as women specifically. I don't know if it's something that is in our DNA on how we are raised going back freaking to the Stone Ages, on how we were born and bred to be nurturers, that we have to be, you know, you're raised, you have children, you take care of your family, you're all you're there to do is take care of others, and at the detriment of your own sanity, your own well-being, your own physical well-being. I mean, that is who we are supposed to be. And it winds up translating into our relationships. And it's just not, it's not right.
Yeah,
it's just not right.
You're absolutely right. Because if you think about it, in even not an abusive relationship kind of way, but as a mother, and you're tired and you want to take a day where you're literally not doing anything. You're not interacting with anyone. Even just saying that, like, it sounds, how terrible. Of course, I need a day where I can just get away by myself and have silence. And it doesn't mean I don't love my children and I'm not taking care of them, but there's like a little bit of guilt, even saying
something
like that.
I feel no guilt, no guilt anymore. It took me a long time to get to that, a long time, but I feel no guilt anymore.
How did you get to that?
Acceptance that I did not have to feel guilty to care about myself. Because caring about me does not mean that I am not caring about somebody else.
True. Very true.
They are not mutually exclusive. You know, it's when you care about yourself, it does not mean that you are shunning your children. I'm still a single parent. I'm dating. I'm in love. But for, I don't know, 10 years, my whole life was about my kids. Only about them. Everything was about them. I went to work. I mean, I worked up until recently a pretty strenuous job. And I traveled a lot. And I wanted to make sure that they had everything. So every sports activity, every dance class, everything. I mean, I still worked normal business hours, but I wanted to make sure that they did not want for anything. So I didn't really go out. I went out with friends on occasion, but I didn't really have a very active social life. And that was because I wanted to make sure that they knew that I loved them, which is also a false narrative that we tell ourselves, that if we're there and we give everything to them, that we love them and we love them and we love them, and we have to do it at the expense of our own well-being. I recently, and it was probably because I fell in love and I now have another person in my life that I enjoy spending time with, that I realized that my whole world is not necessarily about my children. I started exercising, which I love, exercising regularly, which I love. And I had to have a conversation with them. They're 12 and 16 now, so they're not babies. But I had to have a really hard conversation with them explaining that, you know, my whole life has been devoted to them. So just because I'm pulling back a little does not mean that I love them any less. It just means that I'm starting to care about me in a way that I should have for all of these years.
I love that.
So I'm sorry if they feel that it stings, and I'm for them, it's a huge shift because they feel like they're being neglected. I mean, not so much anymore. It's been maybe a 1 year transition. So I think they're getting used to it finally, but in the beginning it was tough. I mean, they're like, you're going where? You're leaving us behind. What? You know, like they didn't know what to do with it. But I was like, it does not mean that I love you less. It just means that I love me also. You know, it's, and I can't continuously put myself on the sidelines. It's the same thing. I'm telling myself, I'm giving myself this advice when it comes to a spouse, that I'm important. Why do you not give yourself the same advice when it comes to your children?
Yeah.
I mean, I love my children. You know, I didn't love my spouse anymore and he was being abusive. Just because my kids are not being abusive doesn't mean that I don't matter.
Yeah. It's,
you still matter. You still need to spend time on yourself.
Yeah, you absolutely have to, because, especially because you can't show up in the way you need to if you are frazzled, you are tired, you don't have that moment to quiet your brain and replenish, then you're not even going to be able to show up when you are showing up for your children fully.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
plus, don't you want them to see you happy?
Yeah. So how wonderful now that they're seeing you in a loving relationship. So with my children, because my two oldest girls are from a previous marriage. And I know when I met my husband now, they, because it was just me and them, a very similar situation. They were very young when I got divorced. So it was their whole life. Mm-hmm. I was a single mom until about 7 years ago. And they're 16 and, 17 and 15 now. And they, I know, were kind of hard on him. And I know that they really wanted my attention, and it was different now that I was giving my attention to somebody else.
Yeah.
But it was literally last month, I think, when one of my daughters go, "Oh, you and Steve are so cute. I love seeing how in love you are." And it hit me, like, because I was always, and I was very conscious about, I don't want them to feel like, you know, that he's more important, or that, and I was always like beating myself up about that. And I realized that that's what they get to see their mom being loved and their mom loving and a healthy relationship. And that is, that's awesome.
Yeah. They never had, they were 1 in 4 when their father and I separated. And they were 3 and 6-ish when he left the house. So they were pretty young. I mean, I think that they have some memories of him, but not a lot. And we have no relationship with him at all. Okay. So he's not in the picture. So they don't have a father figure at all. It is the three of us obsessively, like to the point where it's probably not that healthy. So it is very hard, as my boyfriend says, for anybody to come into our little clan.
Our little clan. Yes, 100%.
Yeah. It's a problem. And my only regret is I should have started seriously dating sooner. You know, your kids, I mean, if you're saying 7 years, your kids would have been 10-ish, you know, or so, right?
Yes, yes.
You know, I always thought wrongly, and this is also, I mean, I try to talk to women about this too. I mean, everybody needs to make a decision that's right for them when it comes time to dating. I intentionally pushed off dating, thinking that I needed to devote my whole life to them because I wanted to create this stable, perfect bubble for them. Because I had seen, by pure coincidence, around the time that my my ex and I separated, I also had a lot of other close friends in town who were also separating from their spouses because of infidelity. And they had young children similar to my kids' ages, and their kids were traumatized. I mean, to the point where they were acting out, became violent, really started like doing poorly in school. I mean, really had some significant problems, had to go see a psychiatrist. And I was convinced, not my kids. Like, I was convinced that I was going to stop that at all costs. So I created a world for them where one parent was perfect, where they didn't feel that they couldn't do anything or couldn't do something just because they didn't have two parents in the house. So we continued to go on vacations. They continued to do sports. I made sure that I was there, that I was able to pick them up. Like, I never gave them, I'm sorry, there's only one of me shit. Like, I didn't do that with them. I do that now. But when they were little, you know, I never did that with them. And their grades were great. Their social interactions were great. They have great friends. They have great relationships with other people's fathers. I mean, they don't have issues, but they do have issues with me dating. So I never realized that when I finally brought someone into the mix, that it would be a problem. I figured as they got older and got more mature, that logically their brains would be able to accept the fact, as a grown-up might, well, their mom has sacrificed, you know, like an adult, right? You know, their mom has sacrificed all this stuff for them over the past, you know, decade. So it's mom's time to be happy. No, it doesn't quite work that way with a 12 and a 16-year-old. They're still very selfish. And it takes time for them to come to terms with the fact that there's somebody else going to be in my life and in their life because they don't see the need for another adult.
Oh, that makes sense.
They're like, it's us. Why do we need anybody else? We have you. You know, they've never seen that. So it's taken some time, and they definitely have come around, which is great. But I didn't think it was going to be an issue. So, you know, my advice to people is don't wait too long. Like, if it's something that's important to you, if you don't want to date, then don't date. But if it's something that's important to you, and love has always been important to me, I just pushed it off for so long because of my kids, because I really wanted to keep this tight family unit. And I thought that if I introduced that when they were younger, that it could hurt it, when in fact, you know, it probably would have been more helpful. Because you want your children, like you had said, to see a healthy, loving relationship. It's important. It sets the tone for all the other relationships that they're going to have when they get older, if they get married and have their own families. You want them to have that role model for them.
Were you at all nervous? Was maybe a part of it you at all nervous that you might choose someone that was not the right fit? Or were you completely past that? You knew what you were looking for and you knew what you would and wouldn't stand for. And
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I was past that.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
I mean, I was not the least bit concerned. I'm very, very self-aware. And I think that the moment that, I mean, I'm going back, oh my God, my oldest is 16. So, I mean, I'm going back 13 years now or something, since that happened. It's been a long time. So, I mean, I did not have a concern about history repeating itself and about me getting into another abusive relationship or controlling relationship. I think I just wanted to keep them in this bubble, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, not quite this long. It got a little out of control. I think figuring out what's really important to you as a human being, and if you're able to think about these things and gain some semblance of self-awareness and mindfulness in your 20s, you know, if you can. And that's probably something that your parents share with you. I have these conversations with my girls, and they're not even, one of them is 12. And they're like, yeah, be aware of yourself. Blah, blah. You know, like, I think they're so sick of me having these discussions with them. You know, it's not just a matter of being kind to others and compassion to others, but it's really understanding what you as a person will and will not tolerate. You know, what values are important to you? Do you value loyalty? Do you value trust? You know, what won't you stand for in life? I didn't have those things. I didn't think of those things when I was younger. I knew after having been bullied that I was strong, but I don't think that I carried, I mean, I was resilient, like I had said. I knew that I was strong and that I didn't let it get me depressed or turn into suicidal thoughts and that sort of stuff. But I didn't really have it develop into a bravery and a boldness that it could have in my 20s. Because had I taken all of those things that had happened to me in my youth, had I had mentors and parents that helped guide me, I probably wouldn't have gotten into an abusive relationship in the first place. But I was on my own most of my life, and I made bad decisions. I mean, that was really just what it came down to. I made bad decisions. Even though I was a strong person, I just made bad decisions. So I try to instill certain things in my children. I try to have them be aware of what's really important to them in friendship, in relationships. Know that they can stand up for themselves, they can speak up for themselves, so that they don't have these problems. I mean, they're going to make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes.
Right.
That's unavoidable in life. And you make mistakes, you learn from them, it makes you stronger. But I want them to be more aware than I was. And I think that if I can't pass along some of the things that I've learned from some of the horrible things that have happened to me, then I'm not doing my duty as a parent.
Right. So when it comes to relationships, do you, you're teaching them definitely for them to be self-aware, know what they want, know what they would, you know, what they want and what they don't want. Are you also teaching them when it comes to relationships, like, do you talk to them about the different types of abuse so they're aware? Like, for example, like a
yes.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, they are well aware of what happened with me and their father.
Okay. Yeah.
They are aware that control comes in all shapes and forms. It is not just the obvious ones. They have heard me have these sorts of conversations with a lot of people. So they have heard this story many, many times. And my oldest one said to me in the car the other day, that she remembers being in my bed when I was in the kitchen and was hit. Now, I don't know if she does or if she actually really remembers it, or if she remembers me telling the story on like a podcast like this.
Yeah.
And then maybe has like snippets of it. Because she was in the room with the TV on, and although it was pretty loud and violent, you know, when it was going on, I'm not sure, I don't recall her really being aware at the time. I mean, I was bloody. I mean, it was not a good situation. And there was a lot of screaming, but I remember going into the room to get her, and she was not upset. Again, kids have different ways of controlling their emotions. But she said to me the other day in the car, I mean, this was just recent, maybe a couple months ago, she said, I remember that day. Wow. So, you know, I think she has a pretty good sense of, especially when it comes to physical violence, and controlling behavior, like, teenagers have a big problem with control, as in the guy specifically, or actually it happens a lot with the girls too. They don't want you to hang out with your friends. Like, they only want you to be with each other mm-hmm. when you're dating. So you are completely isolated from your friend group. You are not allowed to text people. You are not allowed to call people. You know, they check your phone, they check your social media. She is very aware of those sorts of things. And we have very open conversations about that. There was actually even a case, one case that she shared with me, of a senior who hit a sophomore in her school. And I, of course, use everything as a teachable moment, which she, of course, makes fun of me for. but, you know, I was like, would you tolerate that? You know, I said, would you, you know, how would you react? She's like, I wouldn't take that shit from anybody. She's like, no one's putting their hands on me, blah, blah. I said, well, you know, it's a lot easier to say that as an outsider. But what if you love them? You know, that's what happens in every relationship. You love them and you excuse it. It's just once. It won't happen again. They apologize. They always apologize, right? I mean, every time you get hit, they apologize. Every time they scream at you or they throw something at your face, they apologize. You know, I said, well, what if they apologize? Would you forgive them? She's like, no. She's like, hitting is hitting. I was like, okay. I said, I want you to understand that you need to share that with me. You know, we just try to have an open, very open line of communication, to the point where she probably shares some things that she shouldn't share with me, but I would rather know more things than not.
Yep, I agree.
Because she could be in a situation where she thinks that she's making good decisions, and she's not, you know? So at least she has the benefit of me interjecting. And then, you know, ultimately she's going to decide what she wants to decide, but then I can sort of keep an eye on things remotely. But yeah, I mean, she doesn't think, she's like, there's a zero tolerance zone for physical abuse. And even with the friend thing, with controlling friends, she said, yeah, we don't see that girl anymore because her boyfriend controls who she sees and what she does and what she wears. And she's like, she doesn't even wear the same clothes anymore because he doesn't like what she wears. And she's like, I'm not changing what I wear for anybody. And I was like, okay. I was like, I'm just hoping that if you get into a relationship and someone tries to control you, that you remember that. Because it's very different. You know, no woman in their right mind that has not been abused is going to sit with me or you and say, oh, yeah, I would let him hit me once and I would excuse it. Or he could cheat on me once and I would let it go. No one in their right mind is going to tell you that.
Yeah.
They're all going to say, oh, I would never let anyone hit me. Mm-hmm. No, I would leave him in a heartbeat if he hit me. I would leave him in a heartbeat if he cheated on me. But most women excuse it.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with, you know, with teenagers. They can very easily say, you know, they can look at their friends and say, I would never let my boyfriend control what I wear or who I hang out with. But the moment they're in it, you know, love takes over and then you make stupid decisions. Yeah. It doesn't go away just because you become a grown up. So, you know, you just try to do the best you can, especially with your children. You try to pass along the best you can. And if you are a survivor, there is no excuse to not have open discussions I mean, I don't, do you discuss this sort of thing? Are your kids aware of what happened?
Yeah. Yes. So my kids are aware of what happened to me when I was little. They're aware of, that abusive relationship I was in. I use, and parents may think of it in different ways, but I have used everything I experienced as a teachable moment 100%. They know everything. I didn't like go into super gory detail, but they also know about my podcast. And I had open conversations about that. My oldest one was saying she's too nervous to listen to episode 2 where I share my story. And I said, then don't, you totally don't have to. But they know all of it.
I think it's important. I mean, again, I know that people have different opinions on that. Some people feel that there's a certain age. Some people feel that, it's just too much for your children to.
Well, my 6-year-old doesn't know. because we wouldn't even be able to have a conversation. I'm trying to remember when I don't remember what age we started talking about it. I know though that I gradually shared more. So when they were younger, and I was struggling with depression and I talked to them that I was hurt when I was a child, but I didn't tell them really what happened. And then now though, as teens, because they'll talk to me about their emotions and how they're struggling. So I personally love it because I feel that they can come to me and they know that I'll understand. I mean, all teens have that kind of, you'll never understand, type of thing. But I think like when my one teen is feeling depressed or, and she doesn't understand why, that she knows she can say that to me because I understand that. And about relationships, my one daughter had a relationship with this guy and she was wondering if he might be lying or cheating. And she came and talked to me about it and she knew I had an experience with that. So they don't seem damaged by me telling them, sharing my stories with them.
I mean, your kids also, I mean, everybody knows their children the best. I just don't feel I'm doing them a service by not, sharing it and using it as something to teach them on how to overcome things that they might encounter in their own lives.
Yeah. Because I would talk about the same way, like that I was in this relationship and this is how he treated me. And I felt like, I needed to save him or blah, 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 blah. And it obvious, it's not right. That's not a relationship you should be in. You should never allow someone to treat you that way. So I think it's helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Awesome. Oh, it's been so great talking to you. Had put some of the things that you had pointed out specifically that you want everyone to know that they do not need to stay in an unhealthy relationship for any reason, not because kids need two parents or for whatever, for whatever reason they're saying they do not need to stay in an unhealthy relationship. They have to care about themselves as well. I love how you said, I started caring about me the way I should have a long time ago. Yep. And I love that. And that's beautiful. We should have open conversations with our children about these things so that they can learn and so they can identify as well if they find themselves in those types of relationships. And hopefully that never happens. And it's not your responsibility to heal anybody.
Yep. Yeah. That's a biggie.
Yeah.
That's a biggie. And I think that if you can accept that when you're in a relationship, or you can accept that when you're out of the relationship, you can work towards healing yourself.
Is there anything else you want to leave the listeners with? I mean, you shared so much, but I always like to give an opportunity at the very end, if there's anything.
So like you, I mean, you've got this amazing platform that you've, started for your listeners. I think you're going to share my contact information with people. Yes. LinkedIn is probably the best place to get me by. Anybody can private message me on LinkedIn. I am always available to talk. So whether you are in a relationship and you're struggling to get out, or whether you're out of a relationship and you are struggling to come to terms with not feeling like a victim, not feeling guilty, and trying to overcome and really move past the pain, I am here to listen. So I'm always available to take calls, and I would love for you to reach out to me. I'm always available. So that's really what I want to leave people with today. I faced a lot of challenges in my life, and paying it forward is extremely important to me, to just listen and share and offer some guidance if that's what you need. I mean, it's really whatever the person needs, I'm here. So
that is really awesome, because I know that sometimes people feel so alone. So to know that you have Allie, if you need to talk to her. So I definitely will put your contact information in the show notes, and so that people know how to contact you.
Yeah, definitely.
And I want to thank you so very much
for
sharing, because I know that these stories will help heal and guide people. So thank you, Allie, so much. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. This has been so wonderful.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, I love sharing, and I loved hearing your story as well. So
thank you so much. All right. Yeah, well,
thank you so
I hope
much.
You have a beautiful day.
You too.
Right,
we'll talk soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye.